There's another side to good health, and that's good mental health.
Suffice it to say, we've been trying to make this happen for quite a while, Rachel. You know, we're big fans of what you do, and both in your art, but just how you present and what you share, the vulnerability that you share on social media is really, it really resonates with us. And this conversation is a long time coming. So thanks for being here.
It could not have come at a better time. I'm really happy it got postponed. Like, I feel like I'm in a really good place to talk about things. So perfect timing, really.
I was thinking about places to start, and there's so much ground that I feel like we will be able to cover today, but I'm hoping, like, I want to know, what should we know about your early life, your context?
That is this going to be part of the episode, or am I just talking to you guys?
Oh yeah, we're ready. Is, yeah, it? we're ripping. Oh.
This is the podcast.
We love a cold open.
Love it.
Pressure.
About early life. I was an athlete all growing up. I did gymnastics for 10 years, started running track in high school, and was one of the fastest females in the state of Florida going into college. Wow. Really helped out with later in life, learning all these different sports, because athletes tend to have just a really good idea of like how their body functions and how to move in a way that if you're told how to do something, you can kind of do it easier because you know your body. My journey to being a mom, and actually I was listening to some of the other podcasts leading up to this, and am I the first mom you guys have had on the podcast? I know you've had a lot of dads.
That's a great question.
Because you guys mentioned that with Tony, you were like, we've had dads on, but I don't think we've had a mom on. And I'm like, hey.
Does Lisa Cornwell have kids? Because she might be the only mom that we would have potentially had.
I don't think she does. I mean, Maya, our first episode, Maya is now a mother.
Maya is a mother.
But at the time, she wasn't.
Was
so
not.
You know what? We might actually be breaking ground here.
Here we go.
Yeah.
It's a really long story. I've kind of skipped over like a lot of it. But basically, the reason why I'm an artist and the reason why I'm now, you know, based in Austin and here for good with kids is because when I was 24, I was traveling so much. I was dating my ex-husband, but father of my children, and he already had a child. So he had a really young, he was 2 at the time. And we'd been dating for about a year, and the 2-year-old's mother passed away in a boating accident. So I became overnight a really young kind of mother figure in this kid's life. And we agreed. I mean, it was just a lot of change for everybody. And the traveling for me was just not an option anymore. So that was like my segue into not traveling, not working in athletics anymore. But I was kind of a stay-at-home parent to a child that wasn't mine in my early 20s. So kind of a crazy situation. On top of that, the year before that, almost to the day, a year before I became a mom, my brother passed away. And so he passed away by suicide. And you guys do such a great job of talking about men's mental health on this podcast. It's really exciting to me to be able to come here with a sense of having had a really personal experience with the most important man in my life dealing with something like that. So,
wow.
Starting off real heavy here, guys.
Thank you for sharing that with us, though.
Well, it's just a huge part of my story. And, you know, this this year will be 9 years since he passed in November. But I love what you guys are doing, and you guys are being so open about it. And I've always tried to be really open about the grief that has led me to where I am now, right? Because we're not talking about it. You just are, it's doing a disservice to yourself and to other people because you never know who has something similar to share.
Yeah. You're carrying that grief with you. And if it goes unprocessed, somebody that we spoke to very early when we started group golf therapy, Sean Hotchkiss, talked about his backpack and grief represented rocks that would fill up his backpack, and it just gets heavier and heavier. But therapy and the act of sharing that grief is like taking the backpack off and taking those rocks out and looking at them, and sometimes leaving those rocks behind on the road, sometimes admiring the shapes of those rocks and the colors that they have and what they've given you.
I love that.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So thank you for taking some of those rocks out. And
well, yeah. And I think this is a perfect podcast to talk about it, right? Because it's a lot of men, really. Still, we're working on the women in golf, and I love that. And you guys have had some of my favorite women on the show. So thank you for that. I mean, Charlotte Gibson is just a ray of sunshine. I freaking love her. Mm-hmm. I got to have dinner with her when I was in LA, and I was like, oh my God, I want to be your best friend. Can we please live closer together?
Us too.
Same.
You know, but I love that you guys are having like that, those women that are like, we're not like the hot golf girls. I mean, I'm not saying we're not hot, but you know, like there's that whole segment.
This is an audio medium, Rachel. It's okay.
So it just is, it's nice to see the like the real, the girls that are keeping it real, and we're being honest and open on social media, because it's so hard coming into the sport. And it's, you know, male-based sport. And then a lot of the girls that get a lot of the, you know, they have a lot of the attention, they're, you know, they're golfing in bikinis. So, yeah, so I appreciate it all. And like going back to like the men's mental health and like how I got into this, and it, you know, such, my brother had such a big impact in my, where my life is now. And I'm so grateful for it. Because had my brother not passed away a year before my, you know, my boyfriend's son's mom passed away, there's no way at 25 I would have been ready to become a mom or understand anything about grief. So I'd been grieving for a year on my own. And then I was able to, like, you know, because her family, I'd never known her family. I didn't, she didn't like me, obviously, the new girl. I'm not, you know, we weren't, there was nothing, no big issues, but it's just like, you know, that really sensitive, like new girlfriend, you're with my kid, et cetera. But like the day it happened, her sisters came into town. I was able to like embrace them and say, I know how you feel. I'm so sorry. Instead of like with coming with empathy rather than sympathy. And so, you know, it just it really changed my life. So not saying that there's a reason that my brother passed away. There's not, I'm not going to say, oh, I'm happy it happened. But had I not been given those tools of like how to deal with grief that year before, I wouldn't, I don't think I would have kids right now. Probably, you know?
Wow. That's a lot to have swirling around you in such close proximity. And like you said, at such a young age, in that moment, what tools or practices did you have in your toolkit to process that grief? What was your experience like during that time?
So this is now why I'm an artist, because growing up, I'd always loved arts. I'd loved being artistic. Going in high school, I went to a school that had the IB program, kind of like AP, but it's international. And so I majored in studio art in high school. But going to college, I came from a family where I was first generation 4-year college graduate. So going into college, I was so nervous to do anything with art because it seems like such a illegitimate career. You know, you hear all the starving artists and you could never make it. And so I went into something completely opposite. I went into I was pre-med for a while and ended up in psychology. So, and then worked in athletics. I didn't realize that you could actually make a career out of art.
Yeah.
And so after my brother passed, I started painting a lot more. Because it was a way for me to get my emotions out. So it's always been that for me. It's always been this throughout my life, like, hey, I'm feeling something. Rather than journal, I'll scribble. I'll make drawings. I paint and I get those feelings out that way. And so I was able to do a lot of that after my brother passed. I took a lot of time off work during that time. And then after Harrison's my son, after his mother passed away, I started working on a children's book. Because having a child, I had a degree in psychology and I'd done a lot of child psychology courses. Always so fascinated with how children process things differently than adults. So inherently, they just view the world is different to them. And so having a child that was currently going through such a huge grief process and realizing there's not a whole lot of children's books that cover grief in a way that kids can understand it. So we were given these books that were like, let's see, the water bug and the dragonfly, like when a water bug dies, it becomes a dragonfly and it's got wings. And the other ones are like, oh, you know, your mom's in heaven and she's in a happy place. And it's so like abstract and there's no concrete anything for it. And so I just started playing around with writing a book that was more concrete. And it's about not so much about what happens after they die, but what happens here on earth and how you feel and what happens to their body. Because that's what kids can understand. You know, their body doesn't work anymore. And it's really sad. And it stinks for you. Not saying like, oh, your mom's so happy now. Because my son would be like, wait, my mom's happier there without me? Oh. You know, that's not healthy either.
Yeah.
And so started to write this book. And it's called Duncan the Dead Guy. And it's just a skeleton that can't do anything anymore. You know, he like can't go skiing. And it's just like him at the yard sale. So I started illustrating it also with like really funny pictures. It just got me into like painting every day and then starting to paint for myself again, not just for the book. So like painting these large scale abstract work. And then during COVID, it was just art started to take off. So people were sitting at home. They weren't able to go anywhere and they wanted to make their homes look nice. So I was doing a lot more work during COVID anyway. And moved with my kids to Aspen in the summer of 2020. And during that time, I was in the middle of going through a separation of my then husband. And I started playing golf because I didn't know what else to do. I was like, I need to get away from my kids and my husband for like long periods of time. There's a beautiful golf course in Aspen. It's a muni course. And I was like, I'd never picked up a golf club, didn't know what I was doing. And I just was like, hey, guess what? I'm going to go golf now. So have fun with the kids.
And so you did that alone?
Yeah.
Wow. I so rarely hear somebody jumping into golf solo.
I signed up for a lesson online, went to the golf course and used rented clubs. And when you're an athlete, you can kind of see someone do something and try to mock it with your body, right?
Yeah.
So I was watching these golf videos and was like, okay, well, I guess I can try to swing the club. And I had a lesson. It was July 3rd of 2020. I had a lesson and the golf pro there, she was great. And she was like, hey, you're pretty good at this.
It's striking me particularly with your story that, you know, these three moments that you've shared, the loss of your brother, the loss of your son's biological mother, and the separation with your now ex-husband, not to trivialize those experiences, but it's striking me that in the wake of all of that grief, some real beauty has come into your life. And clearly a sign of your character, it seems, that even in these dark moments filled with grief, you find some light and joy and creation of something new.
I think that if I hadn't had found positive silver linings, there was so much grief and it was so hard. I think it would have ruined me, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because my brother was my best friend. I'm going to cry talking about it now. And becoming a mom so young was so hard. And not having a very supportive partner in that, I needed to make sense of it. Not make light of it, just make sense of it. And yeah, there is some really beautiful things that came out of it. I'm so grateful that I have these two wonderful kids. And I'm so grateful that I was in such a bad spot that I was like, fuck it, I'm going to get on the golf course. I don't know anything about it. I just need to get away. And it was, you know, my ex-husband in golf. And so I was like, he's not going to come out with me. I'm just going to go. And I spent the entire summer of 2020 just golfing almost every day. And it was amazing. And that's what brought me to the golf course artwork. Cause I was painting and I was actually at that point was able to make a full living off of being an artist, which was in itself so beautiful. Very proud of like my path that took me there. And I'm so fortunate that I can be in the arts. There's not many people that can say they make a living off of their art, but, I was, you know, it's funny because golf, it is such an old man sport in Aspen. So I was hopping on as a single and it would be all these like really rich old men playing. and You know, I kind of swindle. I'd be like halfway through the round and be like, oh yeah, I'm an artist. I make artwork. I'd give them a business card. And by the end of the round, they'd be like buying a painting from
me. That's amazing.
Right.
Hell yes.
So I was like, actually, you know, that bullshit stuff that men say about like, I've got a business meeting in the golf course. I got to go. And it's like, oh, come on. I'm like, oh, it's legitimate.
Like so, you were literally doing that. That's amazing. Like, you were making sales, snapping necks and cashing like making checks deals on with all.
Yes. Yeah. It was amazing. Then before too long, you know, going into like the fall of 2020, I was getting a lot of requests, from a lot of these people playing like, hey, can you do something golf? Can you paint a golf course for me? And I was like, no, definitely not. That is not what I do. Have you seen my work? It is abstract. There's nothing about it that looks remotely like a golf course.
Not like impressionist. Yeah.
No, not at all. And so, because like the only art I'd ever seen of golf courses were these like old school oil paintings, you know, and absolutely, I know like a lot of people look at art and they're like, oh, if you're an artist, you can do anything. And that's just not true. Like,
yeah.
So many different styles. But golf courses was definitely not my style of painting. But as we go into like 2021, beginning of 2021, I was in the middle of divorce. It was awful time for me. I had moved out of the house, like, you know, and half the time I didn't have my kids for the first time in almost like 6 years. I was able to have some free time and have me time. And I started being like, I was golfing all the time still. And I was, oh, you know what? What if I try it? What if I try to paint a golf course? And I still knew very little about golf, except I like to go play and drink and have fun with my friends in the course. And so I asked a friend of mine, actually Aaron Ross, you guys know him? He's the BMXer.
Yeah, he's
in Austin and he golfed a lot. And he's like, hey, you know what? If you're going to paint a golf course, have you heard of Amen Corner? I'm like, no, show me. And he sent me a bunch of pictures of, you know, 11, 12, and 13 from Augusta. And he's like, this is what you need to paint. And so I did three. He's got such a big head. He's going to say something about like, oh my God, I'm the way. I'm the reason. I knew it.
I made her.
I made her. Anyway, so I did 11, 12, and 13 from Augusta. Ended up posting them on Instagram. They got a ton of feedback. And it was in my style. So I felt good about it. It was like abstract aerial views, watercolor, acrylic, and ink. And I liked them. They were beautiful. Like golf courses are really beautiful.
Yeah.
And I ended up taking them out to a private club here in Austin and ended up selling two of them. One to Fuzzy Zeller's daughter. And she gifted it to him. I know. And I didn't know who he was at the time. And I was like, oh, cool. And when I was shipping it out, I go to ship it.
Some guy named Fuzzy wants to buy a painting. Well, I don't know.
Yeah. Incredible. One of the others was bought as a gift for Sergio Garcia's daughter's room by her godmother, because her name is Azalea.
Dang.
Masters champion Sergio Garcia's daughter has one of your paintings.
Not bad for the first two out of three went to.
That's a good sign.
Major winners.
Mm-hmm. At the time, I was like, I don't know who these people are, but that's cool. Right. But now I'm like, God, I should have made a much bigger deal out of that. I should have gotten pictures or whatever. And I ended up really getting into the golf stuff, leaning hard into it, because on Instagram, it started to get like, I was getting more requests. I can't say that word. I'm just going to stop saying it now. So I had commissions lined up for a few months, finished up a deal with Topgolf. You know, so golf, it just took off really quickly and it's become my bread and butter.
You mentioned this earlier and I wanted to like double click on it a little bit, but I've also noticed that there's a ton of emotion in your work, specifically in the non-golf pieces. And I'm also fascinated by the titles you give your pieces of work. They're beautiful. They're poetic and they're like stories in and of themselves. I wrote a few down. But I belong to no one. Let's pretend this never happened. When did you forget you were a flower? That like...
Yeah.
Is a tuning fork to my soul. This is bowling. There are rules. I think it's so beautiful. And then finally, the infamous pimento. So the three of us, Drew, Bradford, and myself, are famously pimento cheese haters. So I need to hear from you your take on the polarizing sandwich, the pimento cheese.
I'm not a huge fan. I will eat it.
You can stay. Right? You can stay. Cool.
Okay. I like tip it, but I like adding like thick pickles if I'm going to eat one or something. Cause just like, okay. Yeah, not a huge, huge fan, but I did, you know, I typically paint things that other people will buy. So I figured that I needed to
there
paint
you go.
A pimento what, sandwich.
Paint what the audience wants. But no, all that to say, in all seriousness, like your work is beautiful and riddled with emotion that comes through in your golf course work, but also your, you know, your abstract work as well. You mentioned that art became this vehicle for you to help process your grief, but I'd love to hear more about your process, like your actual painting process, specifically with the golf stuff. We've spoken with golf course architects, for example, mm-hmm. who are detail obsessive, but about how something will look, how it will function, mm-hmm. very future minded. And it strikes me as a visual artist who captures golf holes, you must be so detail obsessive with the present moment.
Going back to you saying that there's so much emotion in my work, and I attribute that also to the golf work too, because anytime I'm painting, I get in the zone and I'm listening to a podcast or music, and I'm in that creative mood. And so even in the golf course work, especially when I'm painting, a lot of times there have been quite a few times when I'm painting a hole for someone that has commissioned it because it means something to them. And a few times it's been like, my dad and I played this hole all the time together, or my dad eagled this hole and he's passed away, and I would love to have something to remember him by, and it's beautiful. And because I have this inherent empathy towards people that lose people because of what I've been through, it's always so special to paint those. And so the process is healing and it's wonderful and it's beautiful. And the finished products, I really like, I think they bring a lot of joy to those people. Mm. And one of the things I've used ever since I started painting after my brother passed away is I use a lot of water in my work, regardless of what medium I'm working in, because water is a really healing element. So water is healing. The ocean, everything about water is healing. And so just like even having, I paint flat. I really don't normally paint on an easel because I'm using water and I'm letting it sit there and like kind of take the pigment where it should go, which is a really fun way to paint golf courses, because the pigments in golf courses are gorgeous and they lend itself perfectly to working with water. Wow. So greens and blues with water in particular are just beautiful and I love it. What I do love about the work itself, it's not so detailed. It's not like an architect. I'm not super detail oriented because if I was, I'd be painting realistic versions of golf courses, right? I'm doing this abstractly in the way that I'm seeing it. And I'm doing it based on photos that people send me of views they want, right?
Yeah.
And if I did it the way that the photo looked, why don't they just have a photo hanging up? I pull out the details in these courses and the photos that are more like have a bigger presence. And I'm making that look bigger and more detailed. And then the background, I'm not super worried on everything being exactly 1-to-1 ratio from the image I'm using to my painting.
I know you work on commission a lot of the time, but I'm curious also if you've noticed any particular styles of golf holes that you're drawn to. What are some things that like speak to you about golf visually?
I definitely like when there's if I'm doing a landscape view, I really like when there's changes in leveling.
Elevation?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Changes in elevation, because you can make it like it gives you a lot of opportunities, the deeper greens, to make it look like a different, you know, different elevations. Huh. And then anytime there's water, I just love painting water holes. So typically if someone's like, they send me a course they want painted, but they don't know which hole, I'll be like, let me look at the aerial views and tell you which ones. I paint Pebble 7 a ton. I love it because you've got, I mean, number one, people just, once they play that hole, they want to like commemorate it, right? Yeah. So I've painted mm-hmm. it probably. I can paint it now without even looking at the picture of it because I'm right. Like, oh, okay, this is kind of where, and because I don't paint exact, you know, I can sketch it out pretty easily. But I love that because you've got, you know, that like big old, it's mountainous kind of in the background. And then you've got water, and then you've got this cliff. It's just a really beautiful hole to paint.
I've yet to see it in the flesh, but for now, I
need to go out there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I want to go sit there and paint it in person, just, you know, sit. And that's one thing in the next year I want to be working more towards is like linking up with these golf courses and being able to go paint in person. Mm-hmm. Cause I think that it's great. And it brings such a cool presence to the course. Something so different. Yeah.
Not to mention you'd get some great bucket list golf rounds mm-hmm. under your belt too, I'm sure.
Oh yeah. I would love that.
I see it like you're the people that draw and paint caricatures of people on like the boardwalk. That would be you, but you'd be doing the golf course would be your what you're painting. That would be amazing. I love that. I'd love to see that.
Yeah, if you guys know anyone, have any relationships with courses, let me know.
Let's go. Yeah, we'll put you on. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We'll do it. Absolutely. We'll do it like team up. I'll put a little group golf therapy tag on my back so love people it. Are like
yeah. Yeah, yeah. We can wear a hat or something
on the back of the easel or something.
Yeah.
Love it. What have you learned about yourself through playing golf? The introduction that you had to the game is still fascinating to me. As a solo person during the pandemic, embarking on this game as a need to find space. Mm-hmm. What has that taught you about yourself?
It was a golf changed my life in so many ways. And one of those ways was I had been in this relationship that was really unhealthy and I was not going outside of my, I was not making friends or I wasn't confident in myself. Mm. And so starting to play golf and being in front of strangers and being relatively good at the sport, you know, when I first started, my confidence shot up so fast. Golf is probably the reason why I'm here today with, you know, getting a divorce behind me and being a single mom to two kids. Like my confidence grew from the game. So it taught me like I was so confident when I was younger. And then through all this grief and everything that happened, I became just kind of not a hermit, but I was just not confident. And I was, it was just so hard to like find myself in all the things that were happening. And so golf really like taught me like, hey, make time for yourself. It will make you a better mom. It'll make you a better person. And it like, you know, getting affirmations from random people that are like, oh my God, you're great at this game. Your art's amazing. This is so cool. I was like, I'm so cool. That's so awesome.
And we save this question typically towards the end, but I think it applies here really well. Just reflecting back as this confident person, if you had the opportunity now to play a round of golf with a younger version of yourself, maybe when you were 25, when all of this mm-hmm. grief was swirling around you, if you had an opportunity to play a round of golf with that version of Rachel, what do you think the conversation would be like with you two?
Oh, I was a wreck. I was so, there was like very little joy at that time. It was just a lot of really heavy. And I think it would have been so nice to have someone from my future be like, you're going to be okay. You know, this is going to suck and it's going to continually suck on and off for a long time. I still like during the month of October, November, I go into like a hole, you know, those were the 2 months. My brother died in November, but Harrison's mom died in October. So every year it's like going back to this place. And every year I think like, oh, I'm doing great. Like September comes around and I'm feeling great. And then October hits and it's like, oh, so hard. But I would love to go back and tell that younger version of me, hey, this is going to be cool. You're going to be good. You're actually going to be better than good. Everything's going to work out in a way that you never thought, you know, never expected. Never once in my life was I like, oh, I'm going to play golf. And now it's become a majority of my time and my life is like centered around golf. And so I think just like having like a, hey, it's going to be okay. Cause you know, it just was so dismal and hard to think that life would go to a normal place back then. I think that it would be really nice to have that conversation. Maybe speed the process along because it took a long time.
I guess we've already talked a little bit about the parent corner of the podcast, but I'm always curious as to how golf has fit into parenting, and have you learned any lessons from the golf course or your time on the golf course that you've taken into parenthood?
Well, it's a lot of lessons in patience in golf, right? Mm-hmm. From the patience of playing a round, it takes 4 hours, the patience of waiting on slow play, the patience of like being really bad on a certain day and just being patient with yourself. And I've had the opportunity to take my my oldest is he's taken some lessons and he enjoys it.
Nice.
He has pretty severe ADHD, so it's very hard to get him to play more than 2 or 3 holes. But it's fun to take him out. We'll go to the range and hit balls around. He loves Top Golf, and so we were there a couple nights ago. In parenting, I think it is such a great sport to teach your kids, because it teaches them all of those things. And then, you know, there is that still, even though it's a little more relaxed, there's still like the respect and the manners in the course. That's really nice too, to have a sport where it's like, you're not just jumping around and yelling and all of those things. And he's learning that from playing the sport. And it's been fun to like do that with him. You know, and it definitely taught me, again, to be like a more confident parent, like be more confident in general. And it's been really great for my kids. I can tell they see it. I mean, they saw a big change in me. You know, we always talk about kids growing up, and we're seeing our kids grow up, and they're growing up so fast and they change. But we don't realize how much we're growing up also.
Hmm.
You know, we're changing. And it's been cool for them to see that. But gladly, it's been in like a positive way, right? So they are seeing their mom be a successful artist. I just opened an art gallery, and doing something that I love as work, and then also being able to take them out on the golf course. And our little Muni here is awesome. You know, I go over there all the time, and I've done some work for them, and they know me pretty well. So we walk out there, and they're like, "Rachel, hey!" And they know my kids, and it's fun. I love it.
That's so cool.
What is it about Lyons? Lyons is a special place. I got the opportunity to go there once. What was it? Late 2021. And there's something in the air over there. What do you think? What is that?
It's just a special place because it is so inclusive. And number one, the course is great for a Muni.
It's awesome.
You know, it's a great course. It's hard, challenging holes, but like beautiful and right in the center of Austin. So I actually, I'm sitting in my studio right now. I have a house in Clarksville, which it's about a mile from Lyons. And so I lived here for 2.5 years after my divorce, and my kids and I were like a mile from Lyons, where we just go over to the range and hang out. And it's such a special place because of, number one, it's the course that like Ben Crenshaw, his whole goal is like saving Lyons and supporting Lyons. I see him all the time. And, you know, Sergio Garcia's also got some stake in the game of like the save Muni because it is such a central place, and Austin is rapidly expanding and rapidly like commercializing. There's a lot of people who don't golf, obviously, that want to, you know, develop it.
Hmm. Yeah.
And it's owned by the city. Well, it's actually owned by UT. And so it's, you know, it's always up in the air of like whether they're going to sell it or not.
Right.
We're trying to get it to a place where we have, you know, the control over it, and it's not in this like limbo ever. But unfortunately right now it's like constantly raising money to try to save Muni. It's the place where like there's 3 schools within like a mile of there. And that's where all of the kids that take lessons go after school. It's where Austin High School is like right here. And they go, that's the team goes over after school and they practice. It's such a special course. And it was the first, I think, I might be saying this wrong, but I think it was the first desegregated course in Texas. So it was the first course that allowed Black people to play. And there's so much like history at Lions, and you walk into the clubhouse and you see the timeline of everything that's happened and when, you know, when they opened the course and when it was desegregated and who all has played there. And Ben Crenshaw's, he's got stuff hanging all over the place there.
Yeah.
So cool. I'm going to paint a mural. I'm painting a mural there this month.
Awesome.
And it's just so, it's so open to the community. And that's where basically after I moved back from Aspen, that's where I took the lessons and I played every other day. And like, you know, you get to know the community of golfers in Austin.
That's so cool. We need a GGT Austin trip. We have a, one of Please. Our team members, hey. Josh, lives in Austin, and
he is.
We need to get down there and
wait. What's his
take
last name?
A little golf tour. Josh Levine. He has one of your paintings. Actually, he told us this yesterday.
I was like, hold on. Yeah, he recently got a piece from me.
Yeah, he has a piece hanging Tory. Behind Tory one, him in his Tory Pines.
Yeah. Oh my shout goodness. Josh That's Levine. Awesome. Hey, shout out. Thanks, man. I love it.
thanks for supporting Rachel and Josh.
He's played that course, and I think he's probably a really good example of somebody who has an emotional connection to that course. And now every time he sees your painting, it probably takes him back to the day that he had there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful thing.
It's you guys need to come to Austin, please.
Yeah.
Yeah, we absolutely do.
I want to get into our meat and potatoes questions.
Mm-hmm.
But also I think like, it's worth saying explicitly how grateful we are for you having shared so much with us during this time. It's really helpful. And
I'm so grateful for the platform to be able to talk about it because there is, you know, there still is a stigma. There still is the, if I post too much about how I'm feeling, people are going to unfollow me because it's sad. And I just don't want people to feel that way. And I don't want people to feel like I'm oversharing. I'm just sharing because it helps me. And I know it's got to help some other people too. So, yeah, I thank you guys so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
All right. You're an artist. I'm sure you have an astute eye and potentially an astute nose. What are some of your favorite golf smells?
Oh, well, I got to think about this one for a little because I know you guys ask it every podcast, and I know exactly what it is. It's like that 60 degree morning, right? It's 60 degrees. You have a light jacket on. It's dewy and it's, you know, sun's coming up and the grass has just been cut. And like that grass smell, that's the best. That temperature and the way that you smell it in the crisp air and the grass is like just been cut to the point where you're walking through and it's like sticking to your shoes. All the like little pieces of grass are sticking to your shoes because it's wet. Yep. That's the best smell.
Crispy air is something to behold. So good.
Yeah, that transports you right to a place everyone knows where that place is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the best. Those mornings are amazing.
Are you a morning or twilight golfer?
Ooh, I love when I can get out in the mornings, but it's usually just easier for me to get out in the afternoons. Mm-hmm. And I'm a 9-hole golfer. I can't remember the last time I played 18. And Nine's so enough. Like yeah. going
Who needs
out.
It? Yeah. Who needs 6 hours of their life gone? Maybe that's just where I play.
Yeah, you got kids. I gotta get
I know. So I don't know, but what do you guys do morning or after? Do you like the mornings or the afternoons? It's a toss up. It depends on how I feel.
Yeah, I like them both.
Same.
The afternoon for me is that's like, you know, you get golden hour. It's the vibe. It's beautiful. That's when the music comes on, and you know. But the morning too is like you have the whole day ahead of you. And that's what I love. It's like you finish playing golf and you have an entire world ahead of you for the day. And I love that feeling too.
Agreed.
I know you said that when you are approaching a painting, you put on a podcast or some music. And I want to know like what kind of music you listen to get you like in the zone for painting. But also, let's say you were playing in a tournament at Lions at Muni and they call your name to the first tee, you get a walk-up song to play as you're teeing off on hole number one in front of everybody. What would that song be to get you fired up or in the zone?
Well, I had, that's kind of a long story. I had a walk-up song in college running track because we, you know, we'd be in the locker room and we'd all have our own.
Of course.
And so I'd pick the same one because it's meaningful and it's kind of funny. Ambitions as a Rider by Tupac. And it's because I know. I have to tell you the story though. It's because my brother was a huge Tupac fan. Long story. He went to a high school and played football and he was part of the first class that was desegregated. So he went to what was an all black high school. So all of his teammates and classmates were black and he was the only white kid. And so there was a lot of Tupac played in our house and a lot of guys all the time around doing that. And so then when I went to college, I ran track, but I was running sprints. They would put on that song, you know, and so that was just always my song. And I'd probably just keep it around, you know.
I don't know if we have any Pac on them.
No.
Do we have any Pac on the pod?
I don't think
so. Or on the playlist?
Well, I don't think
we do.
Well, now you do.
Now we do.
Guys, now.
First,
now
thanks
you
to
do.
Rachel. We will be sending
you. Thanks to this.
We'll be sending you the playlist. Okay, so you were able to play Tupac, and then you ended up winning your event, and the following year they brought you back, and you got to host the champions dinner in your honor. What would be on your champions dinner?
So, I once in a while love a really good rack of lamb and some like smothered in mint jelly. So. Lamb,
very
mint
English
jelly,
of you.
Like crispy smashed potatoes and like asparagus, but the huge, like really thick asparagus. Mm. So good.
Okay.
Yeah, that's my ideal dinner.
I'm pulling
I
up.
Love it.
I love lamb.
Yeah.
That's good.
Sounds amazing.
What is the time on the golf course that you have laughed the absolute hardest?
I was thinking about this question because the time I did laugh the hardest, there was a reason my girlfriend and it was in Aspen right after I started playing golf. So I still didn't know all the rules or like how to act on the golf course. I'm not like a crazy person in particular. Like I'm not going to go out and get hammered drunk and just be like, you know, belligerent, but I didn't know like the little things. Right. And so her and I took some mushroom chocolates. Can I say that? Sick. Here?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. Let it fly.
Anyway, so yeah, I know it's amazing. Anyway, so we're just like laughing our asses off at anything, right? Just like nothing's happening. We're laughing anyway, but we're also like drinking transfusions too. And so we're playing a par three and I'm driving the cart, right? We're playing par three. You're not supposed to drive on a par three at all, right? So it's her and I, and we have two of our guy friends playing that are good golfers and they know the rules of the golf course. So I didn't hit onto the green, but I hit like right in front of the green and I'm driving and I just drive right up to my ball. And these guys are just like back there. They're like, get off. Oh my God, get off. And I'm like, what are you? And I'm on mushrooms. So I'm just like, oh what? God. And I'm standing there and I'm like hitting the ball. And like my cart, it's 4 feet away from the green. And these guys are just yelling. And her and I could not stop laughing. And I don't know why. It's not funny now talking about it. Because I'm like, oh, mortified. That's awful.
Yes.
But, you know, her and I were almost peeing our pants laughing so hard. And them trying to talk to us afterwards. But like on mushrooms, we're like, what? Like, why are you so mad? Everything's cool, guys. We're good. Yeah. Like I look back and I'm like, oh God, that's not good. You're not supposed to drive on a par three at all. Like nonetheless, like 4 feet away from the green where you're like cart's almost sitting on the green.
And on shrooms and having drank transfusions all day.
God. Yeah. Mushrooms are great for golf.
Damn.
I was actually hoping you were on the green with the cart. So I was hoping you just hopped out and just putted and just like, what's wrong with this picture? Like,
what, guys? Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, looking like a bad photo shoot. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I've seen those photos. So bad.
So you, DJ Khaled would do that.
I need to get him a painting. I need to get Drake
I think he's reachable.
Painting. Yeah.
I think
he's reachable. Yeah.
Guys, let's figure it out.
I'm sure he likes art. Yeah.
So, Rachel, this podcast is very graciously sponsored by Red Rooster. the team at Red Rooster, they make our favorite golf gloves, and we would love to get you one after we get off the podcast here. We have a segment on the show that we call Get a Grip, where we will give you a full uninterrupted minute to rant about anything in golf that is currently grinding your gears. So,
oh God, guys. Oh.
Feel free to take some time. No rush, no pressure.
Because you guys we'll can edit out when I'm...
Of course, yeah. Connor will do that.
Yeah.
Our editor will do that. Right? You're looking at him.
I've got, you know, there's something so personal that's grinding my gears right now, and I'm afraid to talk about it because I don't want to, like, rub anyone the wrong way. I might talk about it, though, guys. It's a little controversial. Are you sure?
Let's hear it.
I'm terrified.
Yeah, let's go.
Let's do it.
You're like, it's only I hate group golf therapy. You guys fucking suck.
It took them fucking 6 months to get me on the podcast. No, you guys
are
great.
It's hard.
Yeah, I'm worried to talk about it because it is so personal. It's actually like kind of, it's not an attack on me at all, but it feels like it. Like I've spent, you know, the better part of my career. Like my job is learning the art materials and learning what looks best with what and like crafting and perfecting a craft. And it's taken a good chunk of my adult life to do that. And there's a couple, like one in particular, you know, of these influencers that are now dabbling in doing art.
Oh, and, shit. And
I am getting these messages all the time from people like, oh, my God, have you seen this? And, you know, because they're influencers, they're able to, like, you know, there's this huge followings that they're selling their art to. And they're getting it to these, like, these people that I'd love to sell my art that I've worked for my entire adult life on perfecting my craft. And, you know, they're not, I will not put down anyone's work. Right. But it's very clear. It's just an influencer thing. And it's really frustrating because, you know, I want to sell to these people that, and it, you know, not like stay in your lane because people can do whatever they want. Right. But it's been frustrating and to hear from so many people like, oh, my God, have you seen this? Oh, my God, what are you doing about it? I'm like, I can't do anything about it. You know, just I'd rather like people find my work and buy my work because it's my career and it's my livelihood. And this person's just doing it on the side or these people are just doing things on the side. And it's taking away a lot of this, like it's making it, it's like kind of making everyone's golf work in the space, like taking it down a notch. Like it's not, you know what I mean? Yep. It's just been, it's kind of frustrating. But, you know, there's nothing I can do about it except kind of just be mad and rant about it for a minute, I guess. So
there you go.
Get a grip.
Minute over. Get a grip.
Thank you.
Get a grip, Rachel.
Yeah.
All
right.
How do you feel about AI? Has that been a...
Oh, God.
Yeah, here we go. Let's go.
All right.
So
round two.
Fire up the clock. AI, it's so frustrating because they're able to make AI look so authentic now.
It's like, terrifying.
You can print and it is terrifying. Yeah. You can like type like my name into this AI generator and it'll generate art that looks like my art.
And, I hate that.
Yeah. And it's really frustrating.
So weird.
But you know, I think with other careers, it's a little, I think people are still going to value authentic, like in-person artwork, you know, the physical artwork, right? Over AI stuff. So with art stuff, I'm not as worried, but like if I was in like architecture, that's a different story.
Yeah, that's
like
a commodity.
I think AI is going to take it. Yeah. I think AI is going to take over a lot of other professions before it'll take over physical artwork. But it's still very frustrating to see, you know?
Yeah. It's
AI out here cutting corners.
It can be used as a great tool, but it's also, it never replaces the human touch, in my opinion.
Yeah. No, I agree. Same with like NFT stuff, you know? You guys talked about that in a former podcast with Tony. Oh. I freaking love Tony, by the way. Yeah. Tony Napton, he's awesome.
Now back, former Austin resident. Now he's back in
great
state of Wisconsin, which is my state. So I'm gonna see Tony very soon. Tony, I love you. See you soon.
Tony, I love you. Please come back to Austin. He's so
Tony's
great.
Heart was in Wisconsin the whole time he was there. So I know that golf became your sanctuary in 2020 and potentially and beyond. What are some of your happy places outside of golf?
I was a big mountain biker. I still mountain bike a lot. But I worked for Trek out of college too. Yeah. So I got to work in the cycling industry for a while. And my favorite, like some of my favorite times and like just peace and being away. There's some really great mountain bike trails out in Aspen. And one of them goes from Snowmass to Aspen. And like the top, the peak of that trail, and you're like seeing the town of Aspen, like behind you is all the hills and like mountains and snow mass. Like that is my happy place. And you've done like 1,000 feet of ascent, you know, and you're like proud and like tired, but you're taking it all in. That's my happy place.
I don't think I'll ever go mountain biking.
Why?
I'm terrified. I see videos of people mountain biking and
not
fucking themselves up.
Like, well, no, not, I don't downhill. I don't do that type, the type that's a scary type. Oh. No, I do like,
okay. Not like do the roots and trees and.
Well, I do.
You're not like going on like planks. You're not like walking riding on bounce beams or anything. Yeah.
No, I'm not doing that stuff.
Electrifying.
I'm ascending. It's more for like the workout, you know, I don't downhill biking. Well, I do go downhill, but it's not like the crazy one you're seeing. I mean, it might be crazy the first time you do it, but it's like, I don't know how to describe it.
Nothing beats flipping over your handlebars head first.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm a little more careful. I'm not just like jamming down the mountain. I don't have a bike that does that. I've got a hardtail, so I can't do that stuff. And I don't want to.
I think I would hit every single route on the way down and just eject myself off of the bike. I don't think I'd make it down. I'm genuinely terrified, but maybe one day I'll try. Who
knows? You should. It's a really nice release. It's fun.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, Rachel, what goals or intentions you have for the coming year regarding your mental health? I know you mentioned like October and November being a particularly difficult time of the year for you typically. And I'm curious if you have any sort of, like goals or intentions kind of in the lead up to that period of the year.
Yeah. This year this is the first year where I'm actively now trying to start to plan, because I always, in the years past, I've always felt really good around this time of the year. And I always think this is going to be always different. I'm going to feel better. Like I don't have to worry about it. And unfortunately, October, November should be my busiest months of the year for painting because of all the commissions for Christmas. So in the past few years, I've like stacked up my golf commissions where I'm doing like 10 to 20 paintings each month in October and November to lead up for Christmas. And it's because I always get those commissions in like September or, you know, even now I start getting them now and I'm like, it's going to be fine. I'm going to be fine. And it's nice because that time of year, I make a good chunk of income for the year. But this year I'm like, you know what I need to do? I need to stack it up so like I can take like the month of November off. Mm. You know, I just need to be able to do that. Do things for myself during those months, like not commissions. And I'm like stressed about getting to people for the holidays because they're going to be pissed if they don't get it in time. I mean, I can't just like be like, hey, I was sad. I couldn't do your work. Sorry. Mm-hmm. You know, and like, cause it's like a lot of times it's like really meaningful gifts that people are giving other people. So I end up like putting myself in such a bad place mentally every year because I'm trying to do these paintings and I'm not in a creative space and I am really like, you know, not good mentally. And then it puts me in like in December, by the time like December 10th rolls around, which is cut off and I have to ship everything out by then. December 10th comes around and I can't even enjoy the first like couple weeks with my kids, like celebrating the holidays. Cause I am like, you're dead to the world. I'm like, you know, just anxiety ridden and sad and all those things. So this year I'm trying to make it so that I'm going to do some commissions for the holidays earlier. And just if people want to jump on it, they will. And if they don't, they won't. And, you know, just see how that goes. So I'm really going to try to take some time for myself and know like, hey, you know what? November is going to suck. Like it will. It's just going to happen. So let's prepare for that rather than just like thinking that it's going to be different than every other year.
Yeah. Naming something like that can be so powerful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Saying that out loud, like this is going to be real. This is going to suck. This is going to be shitty.
And it will. And I wish it wouldn't, you know, and I wish it wouldn't. I wish I didn't feel like that. Like, and I can do all the things to help myself feel better, but there's still going to be a lot of tears and a lot of just like emotional. It's just an emotional time. And it's going to be every year. I mean, you know, when you lose someone like that, there's like so many questions that pop up, and a lot of the rest of the year, it's like fondly remembering our time together. And then that part, it's like that part of the year, it like takes me back to like the moment I found out about it, how hard it was moving through that. And it's like, oh yeah, doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm prepping myself to like be better for, like just be better to myself to help my mental health during those months so that I'm not suffering through the end of the year.
I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all part of the part of growing up and figuring out what works. And
you can't like, yeah, you just like not hiding what's the things that the issues you have. Like I have anxiety. I know that there's things I do to help with that. There's medications you can take and like, it's okay. It's okay that you can know these things about yourself and it's not embarrassing. Like, you know, there's so much stigma behind it. And I, you know, especially for men, you guys, like you have to like, it'd be so hard for you guys. I feel like, you know, you're supposed to be tough and not cry and, you know, all of those things. And, you know, just being gentle with yourself.
I cry all the time.
Good. I'm so happy that you cry all the time.
Probably like once a week. Yeah, for sure.
And I didn't get you to cry on the podcast. How is that?
We'll get there.
That's what you think.
Yeah.
We've been sobbing this whole
crying
time. We just have incredible concealer on.
Yeah.
Love it.
Rachel, in all seriousness, thank you again for spending this time with us. It was a long time coming, but like you said, mm-hmm. there's a season for everything, and it seems like we did this at a really good time.
Yeah. I can't tell you how much I appreciate it.
Hopefully we'll get down to Austin soon and
I've got a room for you guys to stay in. Woo. So let me know. It's a mile from Lions.
Oh. All right.
Hang out at the gallery. I'm here for it.
Yeah, come hang out at the gallery. Yeah. Love that.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks guys.